Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Questions for Chrissy Telephone Town Hall. For those who have joined us before, welcome back. And for any first-timers, welcome. This is Chrissy's 87th Town Hall, and we're excited to hear from you this evening. I have some very quick housekeeping items before I turn it over to Chrissy. We will begin Q&A in just a few minutes, so we already see some online questions coming in. Thank you. We'll have more directions on that in just a second. So Chrissy will move to Q&A after she addresses two topics we hear most about right now, and that is the Israel-Gaza war and immigration and border security. So to begin, we do have a poll question for everyone who's tuning in via their telephone. And so the poll question is, what issue area is most important to you right now? For number one, and you would press number one on your keypad on your phone, number one is the economy, inflation, or cost of living. Number two is foreign policy and global conflicts. Number three is education and workforce development. Number four is safety and gun violence prevention. Number five is healthcare access and affordability. Number six is immigration reform and border security. And number seven is other. So again, quick poll question for everybody who's tuning in. Go to your keypad on your phone. Number one is the economy, inflation, and cost of living. Number two is foreign policy and global conflicts. Number three is education, workforce development. Number four is safety and gun violence prevention. Number five is healthcare access and affordability. Number six is immigration, reform and border security. And number seven is other, and we will give the results of that poll later on in the telephone town hall. To ask a question, our team is standing by, so press star three, and you'll be connected with one of my colleagues in Westchester, Reading, or Washington, D.C. to assist you. And with that, I'll hand it over to our U.S. Representative, Chrissy Houlihan.
Thanks, Aubrey, and just making sure that you can hear me.
Yes.
Excellent. And again, sorry very much for the time change. Unfortunately, I'm at the whim and will of the House of Representatives, and my Intelligence Committee ended up having its one and only markup, which is when you sit down and finally pass your largest bill of the year today at 5 o'clock rather than Thursday. So again, my apologies for having had to push this meeting. First and foremost, thank you so much for all of you all who are still here and able to join. Yesterday, we had, as I mentioned, this markup that sort of created a snafu. But before we start with our live calls, I want to make sure, as Aubrey mentioned, that we answered a couple of very, very frequently asked questions that our office and I receive all of the time, mostly because that way hopefully your questions will be answered because perhaps those are your questions. And then, of course, we'll have the opportunity for you guys to ask questions as well. So the first question we are getting quite a lot of is why has a ceasefire not been agreed to in Gaza? And I think it's a really good question. Some of the news that's coming out today is, relatively speaking, more hopeful than it was yesterday. But I want to make sure that you understand kind of my perspective on that. As an Air Force vet and a member of the House Armed Services and Intelligence Committees, I spend a lot of time in Washington and many, many hours in hearings and briefings and meetings about this situation, and it is, of course, incredibly complex. Since October 7th, I have been able to issue nearly a dozen statements that really outline in detail all of my thoughts on this really terrible war. So I won't, of course, have time to go through all of those statements here tonight. But I would love it if I could encourage you to please do go to my website, and please do this frequently for other issues as well. Under press, you will be able to find all of those nearly dozen statements that I've made at various points in time. Hopefully, you'll be able to see how heavy this war is weighing on the world and on this Congress, members of our community as well. It, of course, weighs very heavily on my heart too every day for both our Jewish and our Muslim neighbors in Chester and Berks County and across the world. We are definitely seeing a rise in bigoted attacks. In fact, I just got off the phone earlier this afternoon with one of the leaders of our Muslim community who affirmed that and confirmed that and have had many conversations with our Jewish community as well on that issue. These attacks really simply have to end, and I'm really heartened, and I shared this with our Muslim and Jewish communities recently, by the way, that our community has indeed come together to support one another and has to this moment continued to keep our lines of communication open. Where I stand is that for months I've been calling for that ceasefire, a ceasefire that will include the safe and swift return of the hostages. Just this Sunday, President Biden, you may be following, called for a vote in the of a U.S. resolution that would back a proposal for permanent ceasefire and, of course, for the release of the hostages as well. I very much fully support this effort, and it looks as though Israel and Gaza may as well, based on the headline that I just recently saw. But there still is, of course, a lot of work to be done at the negotiating table as well. So we have to be aiming ourselves at a durable ceasefire, one that will be able to last and will allow additional and consistent humanitarian aid to be able to come to the region, will allow for a peaceful and protected Israel and a two-state solution, a safe place for the Palestinians, free of Hamas, all of us being free of Hamas. So I've said before, this issue is very, very personal to a lot of us in our community, and I do take that responsibility very seriously here in Washington to represent all of the diverse views of our community every single day. So for all of you all who have written, for those of you who have called or reached out, thank you. Please continue to do so, and I will continue to do my best to serve and represent us on this complicated issue. The second frequently asked question, and sorry for the bells, that's an indication that we're approaching votes. The second question that we receive very frequently is about immigration and security of our borders, and I'll be interested to see in our polling where that ranked. I say borders, plural, because we really have a border on both edges of our compass, north and south, and of course east and west as well. And that border varies by air, by land, and by sea. Similar to the issues that we've just talked about the Middle East, we are challenged with these issues, and the challenges are not new. The challenges about border security and immigration are some that have vexed us as a nation for a long time. Understandably, I really frequently hear, you know, what can be done to protect our borders and to provide comprehensive immigration reform, and I think those things go hand in hand. First, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that people are coming to our country for lots of different reasons, but most are coming here for a better way of life, regardless of the country that they're coming from. You may recall that I am actually the daughter of a refugee myself. Secondly, and importantly as well, I have long held, and I know that our community does too, that we are a country of laws and that our borders have to be respected in order to secure and ensure our national security. So finally, we are a country that recognizes that the least of these, and for hundreds of years, we have to make sure that we're aiding those who do indeed need refuge. And I mentioned that I am the daughter of a refugee myself. And so that journey and that experience is not anything that I ever lose or that ever leaves me. We do need to acknowledge that our immigration system is in dire need of a major bipartisan legislative reform. We need to make sure that we're updating laws, and I believe, frankly, that both sides of the aisle, so to speak, agree on this. Really simply put, our current laws are really outdated, and they're really unable to address the parallel needs that we have for both increased border security and increased legal immigration to make sure that the United States continues to be academically and economically attractive for the rest of the world's best talent. So earlier this year, to address that high volume of encounters primarily at that time, our southern border, several senators drafted a bipartisan deal, and that bipartisan deal came out of the Senate, and it would have provided new federal authorities for drug enforcement. It would have provided the ability to remove migrants without any valid asylum cases, and my understanding is a large portion of people coming claiming asylum are not indeed qualified for asylum. It would allow the establishment of an emergency power to be able to temporarily close the border, and this may sound similar to something President Biden just did. It would have allowed a rise in the asylum requirements or an increase in the level of requirements to demonstrate that you are indeed seeking asylum. It would have allowed for temporary work permits for those who work qualified as asylum seekers, and it would have allowed for expanded family and work visas, and it would have provided more funding for states and cities that are affected by this issue, and much, much more. So importantly, that piece of legislation was worked on over the course of several months, nearly 4 months, again, bipartisanly by the Senate. maddeningly, I will say, madly as well, Speaker Johnson, at the request of President Trump, quickly tabled the bill. And what tabling means is that we don't have the opportunity to vote on it. And that's really tragic because, as one Republican senator said at the time, this proposal would have had almost unanimous Republican support if it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for Trump asking that, and if it hadn't been for it being tabled. So last week, as I mentioned sort of casually, President Biden did in fact announce a slate of executive actions that could try to begin to address border security. I would point you to my statement on that as well, but I do want to be clear, I support these actions, but I also want to make sure that you hear that these executive actions are not durable solutions. Coming from any president, they would not be durable solutions. They will come and go with various administrations. They will be challenged by the law, by the courts. And in the end, the only way that we can make meaningful and durable change is through the Congress. And that's why our underlying laws must change. It's Congress's responsibility to create the laws that will benefit our country. I believe that we have that opportunity to either vote on that piece of legislation that the Senate developed or another similar piece of legislation that's also bipartisan, that's on the House side, that's called the Dignity Act. And I would encourage you to encourage us, to encourage your friends as well, to ask us all to just sort of stop the madness on this. We know how to fix this. We need to do it through the Congress and send the president a bill to sign. And I look forward to having that opportunity and ask you to help me have that chance too. So those are the two major topics we normally have questions on as people call into our office. Of course, I'm certain that you guys have other questions as well. So I'll turn it over to Aubrey, who's in charge of helping us through that.
Thanks, Chrissy. We already have some questions coming in. And so our first question is going to be an online question. Diane, it's funny that you mentioned this because this was before we mentioned our poll, but it leads perfectly into it. So Chrissy, Diane's question for you is, what issue do you think is the most important to the people in your district? So Diane Dempster, thank you for your question. Chrissy, she wants to know, what issue do you think is the most important
sure.
to the district?
Thanks, Diane, and that is a really good question. And if I had to sort of posit based on calls to our office and conversations we have and surveys that we take, whether scientific or not, I would say that the number one issue is our economy and inflation. And that is something that I think continues to be something that is commonly held as a concern for all of us. Again, I would encourage you to take a look at our website. There are some reports that I put together as part of a lot of different task forces on how I believe we can approach this. I do believe it is a pressing issue and not one that has been completely addressed. We still need to make sure that costs are further under control, that interest rates decline. We need to make sure that people have fair wages. And all of those kinds of things weigh on people's minds. And so I think that would be what people would say most frequently. The next thing I would think that they would probably say is border security. That seems to be the second one that comes up. And also, frankly, paired with that is we have a very, very low unemployment rate in our area, in our district, and we really need more people. So not only do we need more secure borders, but we also, frankly, need more people to work, whether in low-skilled jobs or high-skilled jobs. And so those things, frankly, go hand in hand. What I will say is that I have in front of me the results of the survey. And what's interesting is the results of the survey had the highest numbers in healthcare access and affordability, in safety and gun violence. They were tied. The number one was foreign policy and global conflicts. So, you know, if this were a scientific poll, which it's not, they wouldn't have been the two issues that I just named for you. So I think it also kind of demonstrates that as a community, we're a complicated place. We have lots of different ideas at one time. And all of these issues, I believe, are what I consider to be my job to kind of balance every single day. But thanks very much for the call, Diane. And I will turn it back over to Aubrey.
Thanks, Chrissy. Returning to one of the previous topics, we are now going to Deborah, who's on the phone, to ask a question. Deborah, if you are still with us, your line should now be live.
Yes, I am here. Thank you. And I want to thank the representative for her call for a ceasefire in Israel-Palestine. In contrast, I understand you have accepted endorsements and money from AIPAC. And I would like to ask, how do you make these things jive, and would you be willing to reject APAC money and endorsement, given that they are direly opposed to ceasefire?
So hi, and thank you very much for your call. And what I would first say is that this is a complicated issue, and depending on the person, literal individual person that you talk to, who may or may not be affiliated with APAC, for those who are on the phone who may not be familiar with that organization, it's a pro-Israel organization, or J Street, another more progressive, more moderate organization, or CARE, as an example, an organization that is more involved in the Islamic community. All of those different organizations, depending on the individual person that you talk to, may hold a different idea of what sort of peace looks like and how we will get there. And so I guess I would say that I don't necessarily agree that if you're aligned or affiliated or speaking with APAC, that you are necessarily against a ceasefire. I think that that's not true. Everybody, frankly, would like a peaceful, protected Israel. And most everybody, I won't say it's everybody, would like to see an independent and free Palestine, free of the terrorists, Hamas organization. So I think that that's important. What I would also say is we really need to have a ceasefire, a negotiated ceasefire, and that negotiated ceasefire takes all the people to be at the table, including those folks who are from the area, who are from the region. I had a really cool opportunity to sit with King Abdullah of Jordan, and he had a chance to talk to one of my committees about what the path to ceasefire and a peace in the region would look like, which would involve kind of almost like a I want to say almost like a NATO situation, where people would be protective of each other and would assure the independence of each nation. And I think that that's what's going to be required, is a two-state solution with all the resources and all the smart minds together that we can possibly have. I think it's important that we don't forget history. And my personal story, as I mentioned, with my father being a survivor of the Holocaust, is personal to me. I want to make sure that Israel remains a place where Jewish people can feel protected. And I also want to make sure that we pursue peace in the region. So when your last question regarding APAC and APAC money, importantly, I don't think that there is a, let me make sure I explain this as best as I'm able. I cannot be bought or sold by anybody. I am very, very fiercely committed to making sure that I am representing our community, and our community is vastly, vastly diverse. And I want to make sure that you understand that there is a very, very bright line between how I conduct myself and how I conduct myself on behalf of the American people and the people that I represent, and anything that has to do with the campaigns that you are worried about. So I hope that you see in my actions, and I hope that you see in my votes, and I hope that you see in my statements just how committed I am to all of the people in my community and to our country and to the world in terms of finding a durable and lasting peace for all of us.
Okay, Chrissy, we have another live caller on the line, and this call will now go to Mike. Mike, if you are still with us, your line should now be live.
Hi, this is Mike in Landenburg, PA. Thanks for taking my question. I was wondering if you would consider broadening your use of surveys like the one today of your constituents,
sure,
to see what we want you to do about important issues like the budget and immigration, and maybe how we want you to vote on major bills.
Sure. And it's a really awesome question, Mike, and I really appreciate it. In fact, I'm seeing that your last name, well, I can't tell you your last name out on the line because I would be disclosing your privacy. But I went to school with somebody with exactly your name, but in California, so you're probably not that person.
Oh, that's funny.
I digress. Yeah, it would be really amazing if I had the capability to be able to poll everybody in our community, and that everybody in our community was able to participate in that way. We do have a mail a mailing letter that goes out via email that does occasionally have a surveying part to it. But to be honest, it's hard because most people have to opt into our emails, and so it's sort of a self-selected group of people. I don't get everybody's opinion in our community as I would like. And so I think that that's sort of problematic. I have tens of thousands of people who read the emails, but I can't necessarily say that it's statistically accurate. Polling itself, it costs enormous amounts of money. I'll give you one data point. It costs about $40,000 or $50,000 to run a poll that's statistically accurate, and that really is only touching 400 or 500 people in order to be that way. So I'm not really sure that I'm always comfortable that I am indeed getting the pulse, you know, of our community. So as you might be hearing, I'm kind of a data nerd, and I'm really, really interested in the concept of more inclusive, you know, democracy. I just haven't figured out the mechanism to do that. And so I'm trying to figure out, I think we can probably do more with our newsletters that will allow people to maybe pass around a survey. Well, let's try that. But in general, it's just pretty hard to figure out how to get. We have 700 and something thousand people in our community. Let's call it 300 and something thousand of them are registered voters. I really can't sort of solicit information unless you've asked for it. And that makes it kind of hard to get everybody's opinion. That said, please do call us and let us know what you're thinking, or email us and let us know what you're thinking. You can see online every week, you know, whether I'm in session or not. You can see through various different portals and websites and apps what we're voting on. I would very much encourage you to call us or email us. And if there's a little bit of a pro tip I would give to whomever is on the phone, please do call us or email us with your opinion. It's less effective if you send us sort of a form email, or if you click on a button to a survey. It's less effective because it's better for us to know that you are indeed a human being calling us, and that you are indeed from our community, and that you're not maybe somebody calling from a different congressional district with a different opinion. So I hope, Mike, that that's helpful in terms of how it works around here. And thanks very much for the question.
All right, let me get Mike off the line. And Mike, if we see a survey coming up, just know that we appreciate your feedback. So Chrissy, next we're going to another live caller. For this one, we have Elliot in Sinking Springs. Elliot, if you are still with us, your line should now be live.
Yeah, hi, this is Elliot. Yeah, thank you so much, Representative, for having this town hall tonight. Yeah, I just had a follow-up to the question about AIPAC. I really appreciate your vision for peace in Israel and Palestine, like you laid out, but I still don't understand how you can accept AIPAC support when they're actively working against the ceasefire and everything you just laid out. And they've also backed like over 100 insurrectionists and anti-choice candidates all over the country.
So I guess this is one of those places where we can kind of agree to disagree. You're absolutely correct in that I have the endorsement of AIPAC, but I also have the endorsement of J Street and a variety of other different organizations, liberal and progressive as well on this particular issue. It's a complicated issue, and it's really, really hard to make sure that I'm listening to everyone. And respectfully, I really don't think that it is a monolithic organization, and I don't think that it's one of the things that's most frustrating to me is on the issues 1 through 10 of our community. I just want to make sure that we're also hitting other issues from our community in addition to this very important one.
Thanks, Chrissy. For the next question, we're going to an online question, and so this person asks, what can we do in southeastern Pennsylvania to help stop climate change as weather patterns become more extreme? Again, online question, what can we do in southeastern Pennsylvania to help stop climate change as weather patterns become more extreme?
Thank you very much for the question. There's much that we can do both in southeastern Pennsylvania and in Pennsylvania and in our country as well. There are some really good pieces of legislation that passed at the federal level that will help us at the state and local level in order to do that. One of those pieces of legislation is called the IRA, or the Inflation Reduction Act. It is a piece of legislation that is sort of half climate and renewable energies and energy independent solutions, and half prescription drugs and reduction of out-of-pocket expenses for medical expenses, so half healthcare. All of those pieces and parts provide resources to our state and local folks to be able to do things like increasing installation of solar or increasing installation of wind, but also importantly include a sort of all of the above opportunity to make sure that we're increasingly less and less energy independent on other places. And so there's those kinds of opportunities that are available, not just for industry to pursue, but also for individual homeowners as well to be able to pursue them too. So that's one thing. The other thing that we're being able to do is bring a hydrogen hub to our area and to the Pittsburgh area as well. So not southeastern Pennsylvania, but one in Philly, one in Pittsburgh. That will help us in terms of climate change and energy kind of reduction of harmful energies. So I think that's good. The other thing I would say is I'm working here in Washington on that issue. I am the co-chair of the what's called Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, and the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus is what just like it sounds like. It's a Noah's Ark caucus, which means that both Democrats and Republicans are required to join in equal numbers, and we caucus or meet over issues of climate solutions. And so some of the things that we're working on, although not germane to local issues, are to make sure that we have a better pipeline for permitting. Right now, a lot of our ideas to try to reduce energy use are stuck in the permitting process, both state and local, as well as federal. So we're trying to provide pathways for that and clear up the legislative logjam there. We're also trying to work on transmission issues. Right now, a lot of places, ours included, are creating new kinds of energy and new quantities of energy, but we can't get them through the pipelines, the transmission pipelines that are very segregated by region. So we here in Congress are trying to sort of knock down or provide a little bit of a more fluid pathway for people for transmission to be able to make that easier. So those are some of the things, but I actually would say that a lot of it is very, very local, and I'm grateful to say that Chester and Berks counties are really, really on the forefront of this, as is the state of Pennsylvania, and in that it has it in our Constitution that we have the right to clean air and clean water. So I hope that we're taking this very seriously, and I very much appreciate the question.
Okay, great. It is 5:58, so it looks like we might have time for just one more question. So Chrissy, we are switching gears just a little bit, and Joshua from online says, what is your stance on digital currencies and blockchain technology? I see you voted in favor of HR 4763, which would lay the foundation for much needed regulatory guidance for companies in the sector. So again, what is your stance on digital currencies and blockchain technology?
Thank you for this question. We did have just last week or 2 weeks ago, maybe, a series of votes on blockchain and on digital currencies, Bitcoin, that sort of thing. And here's my position on that, and it's informed to some degree from my position on the Intelligence Committee. So I see kind of a lot of what's going on under the sheets, so to speak, and in this area. I really think it's important that we don't separate digital currencies too much from traditional currencies that are used by countries such as ours. Ours is still, and I hope will always be, the currency, the coin of the realm, so to speak. But I think if we don't do a better job, we meaning the U.S., of keeping up with digital currencies, digital technologies, and digital legislative and regulatory concepts, then it will slip away from us, and that we will end up being kind of blind in this area. And so this is why I ended up voting to make sure that we have a little bit more control and a little bit more regulatory financial oversight on this particular kind of currency, because I do worry that in places like other nations, and in a world where there are increasingly more and more use of sanctions, and in places that are less focused on a rule of order and have more terrorist tendencies, that the coin of the realm is indeed some other kind of currency other than ours. And so I think it's important that we take a lead on it. I appreciate the question, though. Thank you very much for it. And does that mean, Aubrey, that we're wrapping up now?
Yes, Chrissy, at 6 o'clock, and I hate to say you've got votes coming up here soon, but for those who are not able to get to the remaining about half dozen questions or so, we will get back to you in the coming days to your specific question. And Chrissy, I'll just hand it back over to you for closing remarks.
Well, I really, really appreciate you guys. And as you've heard tonight, clearly there's like an enormously wide range of issues in our community that we all care about. And it's pretty hard to sort of list them out in any sort of order that all of us would agree on. And it's really, really important that you hear from me, that it is personal to who I am, that you understand that I'm doing all I can to serve in this office with honor and with decency and civility, and to ask that of our community as well. Thank you so much for the chance to be able to serve us in the 6th Congressional. Thank you for the opportunity with our town halls. Apologies again for having to bump this time here. If we weren't able to get to your question, and you did leave us with your contact information, we have a policy, and we're very, very good at it, that we will follow up with you within 2 business days and getting a call back from our office. As I mentioned, please do continue to call us. And really, if you have a different opinion, I appreciate the different opinions and I appreciate the feedback. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Please be safe and please take care of each other.